Were you ever as excited when your team won a playoff series as Mark Bergevin was last night? I loved his reaction.
I did too. And I think, Mark is a passionate, exuberant guy. Like he really is. He's outgoing. He's an extrovert. And what you saw from him is exactly what he is. Now, I'm not that exuberant. I'm not that much of an extrovert. I'm extroverted, but I'm not the same way. So, I'll never forget, Jason, when you asked me about that. You know, in 1999, we're in Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final, and there was we're up in the box, and it's Bob Gainey, Doug Armstrong, and myself. Now, we were three people that just watched the game. You conversed kind of casually, lightly, but there wasn't a lot of demonstrative behavior amongst us. And, you're talking, you're going, and you got a little bit of ooh here, ooh there, but you just kind of settled in. I'll never forget when the goal went in with Brett Hull, and Bob just kind of slapped us on the back. He goes, "Well, that's pretty darn good." And, it was different. I mean, we were the President's Trophy winners. I think it was a little bit more expected. But I think that, my personality, the people I work with, their personalities are a little bit different. But Mark, to me, authentic, true to himself. And I loved it. I loved seeing him let it all out. Because one of the things, Jason, as a manager, you're always trying to build your team. You're always trying to do the things that you think can lead your team to being a little bit stronger, a little bit better. But you agonize when things aren't. So, when you see the things come to fruition, there's certainly a great amount of joy there.
Craig Button from TSN joined us. And so, Craig, let's get to Game 7 tonight. And, Montreal got it done last night in overtime. The Islanders came back down 2-0, which at that time I thought, oh, geez, they're done. Tampa's so good when they score first. But the battle back. We don't know if Kucherov's playing or not. Obviously, it's a huge blow if he's out. But what have you seen from this series that makes you believe like New York can pull it off tonight, or are you still leaning Tampa Bay? What's your thoughts going into Game 7?
I am leaning Tampa Bay, but I don't think there's any question that the New York Islanders can win. I mean they got really good goaltending. They got a really good I don't think they're as good as Montreal, but they're similar with respect to top four defensemen. Pelech and Pulock and Leddy and Mayfield. And they got real balance up front with respect to their forward group. They compete, they play hard, they play smart, they stay in games. And I think that the playoffs, there's going to be those moments in time, Jason, where, you might feel like you're teetering. You just can't totter. And I think good teams, successful teams have that ability. I think the Tampa Bay Lightning have that ability. I thought that, Tampa Bay up 2-0 in that game, they seemed to have control of the game, and then Eberle scored. And it was at that moment in time where it was like there was a spark in the Islanders game. And the Islanders can take those sparks and get them ignited. And, from that point on, I thought they really, really played well. And, they were hounding the puck. And you look at the turnover that led to the winning goal. That was just a tenacity shift. And that's how the Islanders play. But when the Tampa Bay Lightning are on their game, and there's been moments in these playoffs where you've looked at them and gone, they might be vulnerable right here. But they have a way of steadying themselves as well. I think that if you put my feet to the fire, I'd say I'd be picking the Tampa Bay Lightning. But we're talking about razor thin margins here on victory.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. Craig, as somebody who scouts, I think you have a good impression of this. So we all know what happened, in the WHL and all these other leagues, and it's pretty much a big challenge when it comes to what they're going to have to do for the draft at 14 years old anyway. I think that's a negative to start to begin with. But this year they might have to draft, if they stay with their plan, they're going to be drafting kids basically off 2.5 months of viewing. right? The season doesn't start till October 1st. The draft's in December. You got 2.5 months for 1 year, the 2006s, and then the 2007s will be in May. And unless these teams double their scouting staffs, I just don't see how the scouts can accurately get enough views of both groups. You probably got to go first half of the year 2006, second half of the year 2007s. And maybe that's fine. Maybe it's enough. But it's just like there's never been a better opportunity to move the draft and just do the 2006s in May, and now you're on par with the OHL and Ontario. Now, my one, and you'll know this better, I guess the challenge is Ontario has all 15-year-old leagues, right? Like the 15-year-olds there, they play against 15-year-olds for the most part. Here in Alberta and BC and that's not the same. So while I understand, I think they should change the draft, how much do you think of a hurdle, if any, is the age grouping for 15-year-olds and potentially playing, you know, in various different leagues? Is that a big concern for a scout, or could they get over that?
I think they can get over it, Jason. Listen, okay. You know, teams are looking to find good players, right? The one thing I've learned over the many years I've done this is that, and I tell parents this, I tell players this, agents this, if you're a good player, you're going to be found. I don't care where you are. I don't care where you're playing or how you're playing or who you're playing with. You will be found because scouts are looking for players. So does it become easier if everybody's in the same body? Yeah, it does. Like, you know, you think about the Quebec League. So they have the Midget AAA League in Quebec. So really you're looking at the largest pool of players. And then you have the Maritime AAA League, and you're looking up. So, yeah, does that become a little bit easier? But, yeah, but if you're looking for players, teams are going to find players. Teams are going to turn over every stone to try to find a player and to find a player. So could it be a little bit more difficult? Could it be pushing you out a little bit more of a comfortable opportunity to evaluate players? Yeah, but you can do it. There's no question about it.
I heard that the WHL, I got it from really good sources, that they had a vote to change it, and it was split 50-50. Right down the middle. Half the teams want it, half the teams didn't. And so that's why they moved it to December. But now I'm hearing that there's maybe some saying, oh, geez, I don't know if that's right. And they might revisit it. Do you think, and you know, you understand the politics that go on here and change, Craig. A lot of us are afraid of change, regardless of what we do and where we're doing it. Do you think the WHL between now, and I would assume it would have to be before the season starts, do you think they would change it, or do you think they'll just go with the two drafts?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what went into the discussion, Jason. I do know this. And you know, the Western Hockey League they used to have a listing procedure for their league. Then they went to a draft. And, you know, and one of the things is you know, in the West, you know, trying to, you know, get these players, into camps. And, you know, the NCAA became a significant factor. So if they could get the players at a younger age and get them into their system and get them more interested in playing in the WHL, well, they'd have greater access to a greater number of players. But at the same time, you know, you're not getting the players for a year, okay, because they got to go back and play bantam or midget after they're drafted in the bantam draft. So you're not getting them for a year anyway. And, you know, everybody's recruiting. Junior teams are recruiting now. NCAA teams are recruiting. Everybody's recruiting. And, you know, so if you can't have them at 15, why not wait the year? I honestly never like to use the term common sense all the time, because common sense means that everybody has common experiences and common beliefs. So common sense doesn't always apply. But I really think that in this case, you know, you don't get them until they're 15, until after their 15-year age year anyway. What's the rush?
Well, Craig, my article just came out at OilersNation.com. And I spent this took me a long time here for the last few weeks, because I heard that the WHL is contemplating maybe revisiting this. And Chris Heisenberger is a gentleman who has a Google spreadsheet that tracks every NCAA recruit dating back to 96. So I used that. Then I went at Elite Prospects and all the WHL, OHL, and Quebec Major Junior drafts, and I picked a 10-year gap. And I picked 2004 to 2013. Why? Because both of my nephews were drafted in there, so I kind of knew some of the players, so at least that would keep my interest a little bit more. And I felt like 10 years was a pretty good even number. I've done that for other drafts. Here's the funny thing when we talk about, you know, because the WHL's reasoning was, well, if we draft at 14, you know what, that gives us an earlier advance and the NCAA won't take our players.
Uh-huh.
Well, guess what I found out? Between 2004 and 2013, the WHL, because they draft these players, these are drafted players that went to the NCAA, they had more from the WHL than the OHL and Quebec leagues combined. They had more than double of all those other ones because they would draft more of these kids who never played. And in a league where you have turnover every 3 or 4 years, it's not like you draft Victor Hedman, you don't need a number one defenseman for 15 years. In the WHL, you can draft Bowen Byram, you get him for 3 or 4 years, then you need another Bowen Byram. So drafting's huge, and they're wasting twice as many picks as their other two leagues.
Well, and why, like, I mean, my if I had to hypothesize on why that is, it's because you're drafting these players at a young age when there's still greater uncertainty.
Totally. That's why they shouldn't do it.
Well, that I totally agree with you. So just think about this too. So, and players, like, you know, at that age, they're in various stages of maturing too, right? Like, so like, you know, they don't know, you know, you're not thinking about, okay, maybe NCAA, okay, what does this team in Brandon offer me that the team in Red Deer, you know, may not have, the team in Kelowna might have part of this, and I'm just picking out teams, you know, randomly. But, like, again, trying to understand what you're trying, if you're just trying to cast a wide net and just saying, well, we're going to draft them all just so we can have them under our control, okay, then just declare that. But you don't get them after their 15 age year anyway. So why do you need them at 14 and 15 if you can't have them?
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And the other thing, Craig, from a business standpoint, is Connor Bedard's the perfect example because the draft was, you know, how the draft was. He got to come in right in his draft year. And look at the excitement. Sure, he's a great player. But if you were able to draft players, and like the Quebec Major Junior League, like they make their draft a big deal because now their fan base for 3 or 4 months, just like in the NHL, and they get, you know, and they have more, because think about it, in the NHL, how many drafted players in June go play in the NHL? 2, maybe 3.
Right.
Well, in the Quebec League, you have 15, right, who are coming in, sometimes more, but sometimes 40, right? 2 draft picks, 2 16-year-olds to your team. It's a massive marketing opportunity for these teams.
Same in the OHL.
Yep.
You got, I mean, I can pretty much tell you. I mean, you know, the Quebec League with 18 teams and the Ontario Hockey League with 20 teams. I mean, 20 teams. There's 60 kids at least coming in to the OHL. No, there's more than that. There's 80 kids from the draft coming in every year to the OHL.
Yeah.
And there's 18 times 4. There's 72 coming into the Quebec League every year. Because that's at a minimum.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It is awesome, right?
Yeah.
It is awesome. And so, again, you know, you're drafting them and you talk about the marketing and the excitement of the, like, you know, and again, your kids develop so much in certain spans of time in an age group, like 14 to 15, 15 to 17. You've seen it. I've seen it all the time. So why not give yourself an opportunity to have to evaluate a player that's a little bit closer to playing in your league where you can make a little bit better assessment about his potential to play in that league. And the player can make a better assessment about the viability of when to go to that league.
Yeah, well, I believe it's a benefit for all, and I really hope the WHL, they got halfway there to half the league voted for it, and I don't know what the number would be. Do they need 80%? Do they need 75%? Do they just need a majority? I don't know, but the fact that they're even contemplating discussing it again is music to my ears, because I think it's going to benefit the players. It'll benefit the league, and the league, they got to have a long-term vision. Because the other thing, Craig, is, you know, if you develop a player and he gets drafted in the first round, the NHL pays your league more money for a first round pick than they do a fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh round pick, right? So from a financial standpoint, there's benefits there too.
Well, the economics, right? And you know, you think about, you just think about that whole process that you just outlined. I mean, who doesn't it benefit? And again, it's about having a global view and a macro view. And, you know, just look what's happening in the NCAA. Two things have happened in the NCAA, you know, just recently. And I say recently. First of all, the transfer portal. College teams don't get to control players forever anymore. If a player doesn't like it, he goes in the transfer portal and he's gone. He can move to another school. So that puts an onus on a team to make sure that what they're promising, and, you know, if the player lives up to what he's doing, you know, you don't just get to jettison that kid or put him on the side and say, I'm out of here, right? And then now we have the whole thing with compensation and image and what you can do. I mean, that just got ruled on by the Supreme Court. So let's be like, again, like, you know, being able to take control, and the WHL, and I'm like, I understand what they're doing. Times are changing, as Bob Dylan said. And at this time, the NHL, you know, somebody comes along and goes, hey, we're not doing this anymore. There's already been, you know, the groundswell about paying CHL players. That's been fought. But at some point in time, you know, the sales will tip. And so I'm with you. Get on the right side of it. Don't get on the wrong side of it.
Craig, always good to catch up with you, my man. Have yourself a great weekend.
Great conversation.
Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Okay, thank you, Jason.